So we are going to have a wonderful conversation today with Rob Hull, founder and chairman of Adaptive Insights. I first met Rob some time back and covered his story on the blog on the Entrepreneur Journey series. Some of you may have read it. If you haven't, I highly recommend the story. It's a very insightful, interesting story. And today we're going to really, you know, spend some more time with Rob and have a chance to learn from him. Welcome, Rob. Thank you for making time.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here and really an honor to join you today.
Well, where do you want to start? I think, first and foremost, the fact that your company is definitely on track. I don't know where you are since we last spoke. You're going to fill us in. But the fact that it is in the unicorn pool is something that's a congratulations for that, first and foremost. Let's start with your explaining to our audience what is it that Adaptive Insights does and why it's growing so fast.
Sure. So let's see. Adaptive Insights, we're really the leader in cloud-based corporate performance management. And so what is that? Well, at a high level, we help companies, and in particular the finance organization, to bring tools to bear that help essentially manage the company better, giving them insight into what's happened in the past and helping them to project the future. And we do that through essentially tools that are budgeting, forecasting, reporting, analytics, again, all available in the cloud. And essentially, if you're familiar with the space at all, players like a Hyperion or Cognos, we've essentially kind of come into that space with a cloud-based model and tried to do to Hyperion what Salesforce did to Siebel.
And if I remember correctly, your focus, however, is mostly on the finance function. You look at it from the point of view of finance and pull data from all across the organization, yes?
Yes, that's correct. We typically come into an organization through finance, through the CFO, the Office of the CFO, FP&A. But from that entry point into the organization, we're then typically on the desktops of managers across the company. Because if you think about managing your business, and in particular financial management and operational management around resources, that's not a centralized function. That's happening across the organization. And so through finance, actually getting a window and a seat at the table with the rest of the organization as well.
So I would like to go back to when you started the company, and you know, we have heard from a number of entrepreneurs who have followed the lean startup methodology to start their companies. You have not. You raised money right away. So I would like to actually double click down on that very early stage process of how you've managed to pull off raising $4.5 million as your Series A to get this company going. So take us back to that beginning of the journey.
Sure. Well, interestingly, it's been a while. So that was back in 2003. I've been at this for about 12 years now. You know, I was fortunate to raise money at an interesting time, you know, sort of on the end of the bubble, and the economy was good but really not great back then. I think that the couple of things were key to what we were able to do. One, we really had a disruptive business model proposition. Two, we found a venture partner that understood what we were going after. Terry Oppendyke at Onset really had a good understanding of the Excel space and the finance space and really connected with me on the business problem that we were trying to solve. I think the third piece of that was then the opportunity to spend about 6 months working with Onset inside of the VC, and in fact actually borrowing an office from them as we then really built out the initial business plan, understood what the market might look like, did a lot of market research. And so that market research was kind of twofold. First was customer centric. Making sure we understood what the customer's needs were, what our value proposition to them would be, validating product feature set and some of the things that we thought we would go off to build. The second aspect of that kind of early validation and early research was really business model and go-to-market strategy. We spent a lot of time talking to partners, potential channel partners of ours, to understand the direct go-to-market channel, the indirect go-to-market channel, and when and how might we be able to leverage both models. So, yeah, raising money before you have even built product or put a team together was something I think we're fortunate to have done. I'm not sure it happens all that often these days, and frankly, I'm not even sure I would go back and do it quite the same way. But that's how we got off the ground, and with the capital, then we're able to get things underway.
So I'm going to do one more layer of, you know, peeling the onion, so to speak, just because. This is that very early stage process is where we have a huge audience, and I think there is something to be learned from your journey on that score. So you were an EIR at Onset Ventures, and you know, for 6 months you basically immersed yourself yourself in customers, and
correct.
You said you spoke to 50-60 CFOs. Now, let me ask you something very specific. When you went to talk to these CFOs, who would be your customers, these were SMB CFOs, right?
Correct.
Did you present a picture of what you wanted to build, or did you start with questions? What was your specific process in extracting the nuggets out of them?
Yeah, at that point, sort of pre-financing, we didn't even have wireframe design. We didn't even have sort of a visual image to present them. It was almost all discussion. And a lot of it was listening. It was asking questions, understanding the business process that they went through at the time, the tools they were using at the time, and really trying to elicit out of them what were the biggest problems that we could try to solve for them? Because essentially, you needed to provide something better than what was being done. And a lot of what we were trying to figure out was, well, what wasn't working, and therefore, how could we make that better and really add value? And so there was a tremendous amount of question asking and a lot of listening. And then we would jump into, all right, that's great, we hear what you're saying. Here's what we're thinking, and here's how we might go about it. And if we did that, what would you think? Would you pay money for that? Is that valuable enough that you would change your processes for that? And try to get a gauge of, you know, is this a nice to have or is this a need to have? And will they pay a little for this, or will they actually pay a lot for this? How valuable do they see this particular product? And that was very helpful. I'll say once we raised money and had a bit of a team to spend some time on this, we continued that customer discussion, in fact, still continue it today. I think it's a huge part of really, particularly with a cloud business, you've got to understand the customer and what their needs are continuously. But we evolved the conversation from being as much question and sort of research and a little bit more of here's now more concretely what we're thinking. Here's some design. Here's some mock-ups of product. And then over time that continued to evolve into here's actually a product and let's sit down and let you begin to play with that. We brought an early advisory board on after a couple of months of early product design and got groups of CFOs together to provide us with very specific product feedback as well. And so that conversation evolved from just discussion and question asking to then much more in-depth presentation as we went along, say, that first 12, 18 months.
Now, all this was framed in your own personal experience consulting with finance organizations before you started even your discussions with Onset, where you did notice that the whole financial planning and forecasting process was incredibly cumbersome and the tools didn't exist. So you were coming at this with some understanding of what pain point you had experienced yourself.
Yeah, I think that that's probably something I should have said earlier. This really was, I was CFO for a number of different technology companies, and so in large part I was trying to solve my own problem. I was sort of frustrated with the tools that were available and really saw a tremendous market opportunity here, which is really what we capitalized on. But it was based on my own experience, my own knowledge as a CFO, and that, frankly, that helped a lot in the conversations that we had, being able to really understand and kind of dive deep with all of these folks that we were talking to, having sat in their seat and understood their problems firsthand.
And where did the relationship with Onset come from? It sounds like that was a key relationship that allowed you to have this, you know, privileged position. What was the genesis of that?
Yeah, so I am. I was friends with one of the partners. Or am still friends with one of the partners there, who, I guess, I'm fortunate to live in Silicon Valley and have been a CFO for a number of venture-backed companies, so I had a reasonable network of venture contacts. Yeah. And it turned out that in this particular case that Onset was a particularly good fit, very early stage investor, and that, again, I found a partner in Terry that that really understood this space. And I think that that's very very important as you're thinking about VCs. It's not just the firm itself, but really it's the partner that you work with, and finding somebody that understands really the business problem you're trying to solve is incredibly helpful. I mean, that's I think the fortunate part of kind of working with Onset was finding someone who really understood, and actually Terry's a very you know, he's a great kind of mentor and teacher, and I think that where I was at the time played very well into that relationship.
Right. So, what did you do with the $4.5 million that you raised in Series A? What were the milestones that you were able to accomplish that kind of set you up for the next phase of hypergrowth?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, we set out as we raised it. We sort of said, "Hey, here's what we're going to accomplish with this money," and we did that. Three key goals for us: one, obviously, build product as much product as we could in the time frame that we had. Two was to build team. You know, keep in mind again, we raised money, and literally it was myself and my co-founder. There were no other employees, so we had to build a team, put product together. We had set a goal of having early customer, actually signing early customers and getting early customer feedback. So with a handful of early customers, we had the beginnings of our product, and we had built out our team with that first round.
And these customers, a lot of them came from that 40, 50 CEOs, CFOs who were part of the initial customer validation process.
Yeah, some of them did, and you know, as I mentioned, we took some of those early customers, brought them in even closer to an early product advisory board. A few of those product advisory board members then ended up becoming early customers, you know, I think when you've got something of value that people kind of get excited about, and it's people often laugh about, you know, finance people getting excited. It doesn't seem like that's what they think of when they think of finance, but you know, our customers get pretty excited about the product, and what that resulted in and continues to result in today is a lot of word of mouth referral and introductions. So you use that early success to network and to get out to others, and we did that quite well.
Right. Now, what's happened since? Obviously, you are on a completely different scale and path at this point, so take us through a little some of the highlights of how you've built the company to this stage.
Sure. I will say, you know, from an entrepreneur's perspective, it's taken longer than I had expected at the beginning. I think that's probably true of most ventures, but you know, things have. I'll say we started with a single product focus. It was a product focus on forecasting, forward looking. We have now, over those years, expanded that to a full suite of products, again, all focused and targeted around this same process and that same customer, but expanding product over time. We've grown the geographies that we work with over time as well, so no longer just a domestic company, but international growth. We actually have customers now in about 85 countries around the world. And so over time, slowly building up a partner network around the world that has helped us to get into countries where we may not have feet on the street, but we've got great partnerships, and they act as both a local sales channel, servicing them and then supporting them for us in the local market, in many cases in local language. So we've grown product over time. We've grown our channels over time. We've grown geographies over time. We've continued to expand the market focus that we have as well. So we came in very explicitly saying, hey, the market for us to play in is the mid-market, number of reasons for that, which we can talk about. But as we then essentially got established in that space, continued to build out product capabilities, built out a broader reference and referral network, we also saw that we began to move up market quite a bit, such that today, about 25% of our business really comes from enterprise customers and not just the mid-market. So while we're a clearly dominant mid-market player, we've also begun to grow up market fairly significantly. So product growth, geographic growth, channel growth, target market growth has all happened over the course of those 12 years. We're now, I think since we last talked, we're now about 2,500 customers around the world. So we've continued to grow our customer base quite significantly. And the company itself has grown. Employee base has been growing quite a bit to support all of that customer growth as well.
So you talked about the product positioning versus how you have now broadened the target market and so forth. You did make the choice to go after mid-market CFOs as your primary market penetration point. That's where the product was positioned when you came into the market. What drove that decision, and what is driving the decision to broaden out of that now?
Yeah, that's a great question. We did decide initially that the market to serve was the mid-market. Why was that? Well, essentially, if you looked out at the market landscape, you've got Excel on the low end and just about everybody using Excel, and then you've got large enterprise players at the time, Hyperion, Cognos, Business Objects, now Oracle, IBM, and SAP. They really dominated that enterprise space. What that left was a very big hole in the middle. The mid-market was very underserved, needing more than necessarily they got from Excel, but not necessarily comfortable with the cost and the overhead associated with some of the enterprise-level products. And so we saw a big underserved market. What we also saw was that it's difficult for an enterprise company, especially one now the size of an IBM or an Oracle or an SAP, it's difficult for them to come down market. It's frankly easier to build and grow up than it is to build big and come down. It's a different business model. It's a different product set. It's just a very different mindset all around. And so we thought, hey, this is a perfect opportunity to get into the market, establish a very strong position, and essentially do that without necessarily having the very well-funded large players at the top as your direct competition. And that strategy worked quite well. Again, we're 2,500 customers. A very large portion of those are in the mid-market, and we're clearly dominant in that space today as a market leader. What we've seen over time is, again, that you get into that space, you establish yourself. And with establishing ourselves, building great product and having great market credibility, and in fact, a lot of success with our customers, we're continually being pulled now up market. So we've got enterprise customers coming to us and saying, hey, we've heard what you do, and we think it's applicable to us as well. And so that's where now we're seeing a tremendous amount of growth up market.
Rob, you have a question from the audience. I'll read it out. Rajashekhar Rajendran is asking, how did you tackle NetSuite's mid-size market focus?
Well, interesting. I'm not sure exactly what the question is about, but let me talk a little bit about NetSuite, because that's a significant relationship in our history and in our story here. About 2009, we were able to sign an OEM deal with NetSuite. NetSuite actually resells Adaptive as its own financial planning and analytics products. So it's the NetSuite financial planning module. So NetSuite's reselling our product, and that's been a great relationship for us. So NetSuite also targeting initially mid-tier or mid-size businesses and moving themselves quite a bit up market into the enterprise. And so very complementary approach to the market, very complementary target market in the CFO, and from a product perspective, very complementary products, really NetSuite looking at all things historical, transactions for both financial as well as front office transactions, whereas Adaptive is really all forward-looking. We're looking at what's going to happen in the future, and so putting those two pieces together is actually a great fit. So for us, you know, the NetSuite story is one of partnership, and it's been a very positive relationship.
So I'll summarize a little bit for, you know, the audience, the NetSuite situation. NetSuite's product is an ERP for the mid-market, whereas Adaptive Insights product is forecasting for the mid-market, right? Now it's, now both are going up market, but that's where they both started. So if you look at the synergy, it was a complementary product set that went well together, which is what Rob is saying, is that NetSuite then started reselling and using that as a complementary product. Great. So what about financing? So 4.5 million Series A, what has happened since on the financing side, and when was the last time you raised money? What kind of valuations are we talking now? How did you build that valuation?
That's always an interesting story. So raised money early on, as we've talked about, raised a series of rounds. I kind of think about our financing almost in two phases. There was, we've raised a little over $100 million today. The first phase, I'd say about the first $35 million, was really building the early validation, continuing to validate products, markets, our go-to-market strategy, and essentially our ability to execute as a company with a business model that made sense. So with that, we got very good early traction, got to a point of profitability, and then essentially went out and raised more money to accelerate growth. And so phase two of then the financing story really is a growth story. It's we've raised so far another $65 million that has been really earmarked towards stepping on the gas and driving top line growth. So it's been about 2 years now since our last financing, I would expect there'll probably be more financing here in the future.
And how long was the 35 million phase? So 2003 till when was that $35 million phase of validation getting to the product market fit at scale?
Yeah, so that first 35 million lasted us from 2003 up until 2012.
Oh, wow.
And then 2012, we raised our first growth round with Norwest Venture Partners, and in 2013 raised our second round of growth capital with Bessemer, and in all cases, prior investors have been very supportive of the company and participated in every round. So we've been fortunate to have a series of investors that are both patient as well as incredibly supportive, and so it's been a I'd say it's been a great financing story.
And has it, your last round, were you already at unicorn valuations, or?
We were not quite there yet, but I think we're getting close.
Yeah, this time you will get there. All right, so let's see if no other questions from the audience. Okay, we have three more minutes of this conversation. What has been some of your highlight lessons that you want to convey to this group?
You know, I think that some of what we talked about early on is in terms of when you do your financing is an interesting thing to understand. When you do it, how you do it, and who you do it with. You know, if I look back on it, I think I would go about things slightly differently today if I could, and that is I do think a little bit further down the road than just a concept and a PowerPoint deck is probably a wise way to go about financing. Get a little bit more traction under your belt, have a better sense for the fact that you've got demonstrable validation points in terms of customer usage and customer feedback for the VCs. I think it's helpful. It helps you to have a little bit of freedom to be creative early on without the need to necessarily be reporting back every success and failure along the way. And so I would say while I was able to raise off a PowerPoint deck, if I did it again today, I'd build out a little bit more product and try my best to sort of get out to market a bit before trying to raise external financing.
Well, and that's kind of the market today forces you to do that. The market demands that you have significant validation even to raise a seed round. So
right.
The option of PowerPoint financing, concept financing is not really available to entrepreneurs very much these days. So it's kind of like you want to do that. That is a best practice anyway, and the market forces you to do that. So most of the entrepreneurs have been told at least that this is where you have to go.
Yeah. So I think in addition to that, I think a couple of other things are very important. I think really understanding your market and your target market, who's your buyer, what is the value proposition that you're creating for them, and in that target market, you know, really understanding how you segment that and where you're going to focus. And I think whether it's with product, whether it's with how you get to that market, whether it's the messaging, but just the word focus, I can't underscore enough. Understand who you're selling to, what you're selling to them, and why it's valuable to them, and be relentlessly focused on succeeding in one area before you try to get yourself spread out in too many different directions. So,
product positioning is something that we stress very heavily in the 1 million by 1 million program, and I think it is really at the heart of every single really outlandish success story that we have seen is a really laser sharp positioning and understanding of the customer needs, the target market, the segmentation is really, really critical. Absolutely. Okay, so thank you, Rob, for